Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. And I want to remind everybody, we are on Facebook, and it's the Taylor Report. And we are on SoundCloud.com, Taylor-Report. There's a demonstration, now we're in Zoom time. It's going to be an international Zoom event in Code Pink and the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War and hundreds of other organizations are holding a global day of action, 25 January, and it's No to War on Yemen. And that's going to be at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on webinar. Danny Glover is one of the key individuals in Jeremy Corbyn. This is a very important event, and we are fortunate to have as our guest Zafar Benghash, Crescent International, who is an authority on situations such as Yemen and the entire Middle East and all matters Islamic. Zafar, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Phil. It's my great pleasure to be with you.
Zafar, actually the whole world is beginning to talk quite a bit about, I don't know, I haven't understood why exactly, but Yemen has come into the center of discussions, even with Trump going out the door and Biden coming in. Yemen was in the middle of their discussions, a difference of opinion about how to handle the situation. Can you tell us, what is the status of the conflict in Yemen? Who are the parties involved? And is there a mechanism to avoid the kind of humanitarian disaster that seems to be unfolding there?
Yes, well, as you rightly pointed out, Yemen has gained some traction in the last couple of years or so. And of course, the parties involved in the conflict include, on the one hand, the people of Yemen that are represented by Ansarullah, which is a resistance group, and they represent a group called the Houthis. Now, the Houthis are based in the north of Yemen, but these are very, very dedicated people, very committed people, and they have always maintained their independence. And they are aligned with other groups that were part of the former government in Yemen that was led by Abdullah Saleh, who was, of course, killed by the Saudis in a missile strike a couple of years ago. And so the Ansarullah were able to take control of the capital city, Sana'a, back in 2014, defeated the forces of a Saudi-backed puppet who still incidentally resides in Saudi Arabia in a palace, and he claims to be the legitimate president of Yemen. Whereas the Houthis, the Ansarullah, are linked with another former government or group that was led by Ali Abdullah Saleh, who was murdered by the Saudis in a missile strike back in 2018. And so you have, on the one hand, the people inside Yemen who are resisting the mercenaries that are coming from outside, or a minority of people inside Yemen. And then you have the Saudis, the Emiratis, and their allies using their missiles and planes, etc., bombing Yemen. Now, this war, the Saudis launched on March 26, 2015. And this was soon after Mohammed bin Salman, who's currently the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, who took over as defense minister, and he thought that he was going to crush the Ansarullah fighters in a matter of days or weeks at the most. And that war that was launched on March 26, 2015 is still raging. And An interesting point to note is that the announcement for the launch of the war was made from the Saudi embassy in Washington, D.C., by the Saudi ambassador, who was at that time Adil Al-Jubair, who currently is a minister of state for foreign affairs in Saudi Arabia. So it's interesting to note that the announcement about the war was made in Washington, D.C., not in Saudi Arabia, not in Abu Dhabi. And these forces, they started to bomb the poor Yemenis. And it's, I think your listeners should bear in mind that Yemen is the poorest Arab country in the Middle East. But they are extremely proud people. They will not allow foreigners to dictate to them. And the Yemenis have also indicated that they are going to demand that the territory that the Saudis have occupied, their territory that was occupied back in 1934, which is called Southern Saudi Arabia, they demand that that territory be vacated as well, and the Yemenis would like to retrieve that. So basically, this is the lineup that we have, and the Saudis clearly and their allies have totally failed in achieving any of their objectives, because the Yemenis are such determined fighters and such great resistance force.
Yeah, we're speaking to Zafar Benghazi, Crescent International, and Zafar, my impression has been that this is like so many of these wars has been going on for so long, we lose sort of the trace of origins and all that. But my impression has been that it was Yemen came to be regarded as kind of Saudi protectorate or mandate, thinking in the old colonial terms, but they lost their grip on it, right? They had an individual that they was sort of their lieutenant, but he was removed democratically, was he not?
Well, you see, in Yemen has a long history. Back in the 1960s, the Saudis were involved, and it's interesting to note that the Saudis at that time were involved in supporting the Houthis at that time, because the Houthis were in the north, and they had a monarchy over there. And so the Saudis were supporting the monarchy, whereas Egypt came in, it was supporting the southern rebels. And of course, the Egyptians had a terrible experience, as did the Saudis, incidentally. And so they all packed their bags when they couldn't control the Yemenis. And so they left and abandoned Yemen to its fate. But the Saudis have always considered Yemen to be their sphere of influence, whereas the Yemenis have never accepted that. They've said that, no, we are an independent country. We are not going to be your puppets. We are going to determine our own destiny. But in the last, maybe 20 years or 30 years or so, the Saudis have begun to encroach on Yemen more and more, because they felt that the Yemenis were becoming too independent-minded, that they were not listening to the Saudis, whatever the Saudis were dictating to them. And so as a consequence, they came around, as I mentioned, 5 years ago, or more than 5 years ago, to launch this disastrous war, which has been a catastrophe for the Yemeni people, because the UN has repeatedly stated that nearly 80% of the Yemeni population is food deficient. And of course, this fellow Mike Pompeo, even as he's going out of the door, he has declared the Houthis as a terrorist organization. So a resistance movement that is fighting for their own rights, for the liberation of their own country, the U.S. declares them as a terrorist organization. And the U.N. has warned that should this happen, the already grim situation in Yemen would become even worse, because many aid agencies would not be able to deliver food and medicines to the desperately poor and food deficient, as well as medicine deficient people. There's a cholera epidemic raging in Yemen. The UN has called it the worst cholera epidemic in history. There are more than 1.5 million children that have been affected by this cholera epidemic. And this is all as a consequence of Saudi Emirati aggression that is backed by the United States, that is backed by Britain, by France, all of these Western countries. They are backing them. They are providing logistical support. They are providing weapons to the Saudis. And so you see this situation whereby the Yemenis are suffering tremendously, but they refuse to surrender.
Mm-hmm. Again, it's Zafar Benghash. And Zafar, what is this claim that Iran is somehow involved, or that they call the Houthis Shia? There's all this strange language, highly ideological language, in describing a situation where people are fighting for their self-determination. Iran is a long way away. The country is, as far as I know, is it's like a blockade situation. So why is there all this discussion about the Islamic Republic?
Well, this is another of those sort of deliberate attempts to delegitimize the struggle of the Yemeni people. And whenever you pointed out that every time the struggle of the Houthis is mentioned, they are referred to as somehow being Iranian puppets or backed by the Iranians. There is no doubt that Iran has categorically stated that the people of Yemen have the right to determine their own future. But as you said, Yemen is totally blockaded. The Saudis, the Americans, and their allies have their ships and you know, all kinds of vessels all around Yemen. How on earth is Iran going to supply anything to the Houthis or the Ansarullah fighters when in fact all that is happening is that these ships are not even allowing food and medicines to reach these people? So how on earth is Iran going to supply them weapons? I mean, obviously, weapons are not something that can be hidden. I mean, if Iran wanted to do something, it would rather send them food and medicines to protect these people. But even that is not possible. So in order to cover their own shameful and disgraceful and illegal conduct, they keep on bringing up this allegation, totally false, that Iran is supplying them weapons, etc. Now, if we want to be realistic about this whole thing, it is the United States that is supplying weapons to Saudi Arabia, to the United Arab Emirates, and so on, billions of dollars worth of weapons. And these billions of dollars worth of weapons to the Saudis and Emiratis are not enough, including the logistical support that the U.S. provides to the Saudi and Emirati air forces. Even with that help and support, they are not able to defeat the Yemeni people. What on earth can Iran do, and what can it supply to the Yemeni people? They keep on ignoring the fact that the Saudis are totally incompetent, the Emiratis are totally incompetent, the weapons that the West is supplying to them are not cannot defeat the Yemeni people. So they have to find excuses and try to delegitimize this legitimate struggle of the Yemeni people for their own independence. I mean, if the Yemenis don't want to be Saudi puppets, nobody can force them to be Saudi puppets.
Yeah. You know, I want to raise something in relation to this. You know, it's so hard to get a clear picture, and thank goodness Crescent International is functioning, and I do urge people, just go Zafar Benghash and inform yourself about the region and all the key questions in the region. But here we are. I have to mention, I just noted the other day that Twitter has taken away the Yemen government's communications. I mean, they're not allowed to post on Twitter. You know, they've created, not only is there a blockade, but it's like an information embargo, making it very difficult for people to get basic information of the type that you're telling us. I don't know if you have thoughts about that, but I want to ask also about the, since Biden seems to be wanting to come in with a kind of a new face to the US strategy, is there a mechanism in place that could resolve this?
Well, there is a mechanism in place. There have been discussions and negotiations going on in Switzerland and in other places, and the Houthis have participated in those discussions. And they have said that, you know, the solution to this problem is very simple. The Saudis and the Emiratis and their backers should stop attacking Yemen. and just get their forces and their mercenaries out of Yemen, because it's a problem that the Yemenis want to resolve. With respect to what you said, that you know, Twitter has removed the Yemeni or blocked the Yemeni government's Twitter account, of course. And Twitter has done this to, you know, a number of others, to a number of officials in the Islamic Republic of Iran, et cetera. Although I must add that Twitter has also, unplugged Donald Trump, which obviously nobody would mind. But the fact is that these legitimate struggles that are going on over there for people's basic rights, which is the Yemeni people's fundamental right to determine their own future. And so they are being denied that. But I think, you know, the Yemenis are quite, they are quite resourceful. They have their own television networks and other media outlets. Al-Masira, for instance, it's a very well-known Yemeni television network, and they broadcast information, and that information then is broadcast by Iran's press TV. And so we are able to get this information out of there. And of course, there are Yemenis both in Canada as well as in Europe that are able to get information about what is taking place in their country, and they're able to communicate or deliver that information to the rest of the world. With respect to what you said about Biden, obviously, he wants to present a different image than what Trump had done. But I think we should be very careful and not read too much into it. Although, you know, Biden has said that, you know, he's going to take on the Saudis and their terrible, terrible human rights record. But I'd like to be a little bit cautious about this, because yeah, we have seen what successive American administrations have done. I mean, after all, the war on Yemen was launched at the time when Biden was the vice president of the United States. And they didn't seem to have any problem with that. I mean, that went on for more than 2 years until Trump took over. So if they were really concerned about the war in Yemen, they could have told the Saudis to stop it. They would have told them that this is aggression, this is illegal. You cannot do that. You stop bombing this poor country and stop killing innocent people. But they didn't do that.
Isn't it also as likely as not that they actually encouraged and embedded it? I mean, we know that they enabled it. So if they didn't approve, there's no, I know their words, but their acts, as you point out, betray them. I wonder, and we should probably bring this also into the discussion of, well, what is Biden going to do? He's talking about he's going to rejoin the World Health Organization, he's going to do this and that. And I notice, I read one of his spokespersons, surrogate, said they'll return to the agreement with the Islamic Republic, but provided it's properly arranged, or in other words, there's a second aspect to it. It's as though they think they're going to walk in the door and that Iran will give them something to do that if they're going to resume the agreement, you know, over the maintenance of a nuclear arrangement, an agreement. It looks to me like they're trying to leverage a new position for themselves if they return to the original peace agreement or nuclear agreement with Iran. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, the agreement that is referred to as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which was signed in July of 2015 after many years of negotiations. And I think it's important to keep in mind that it was an agreement that was signed not just with the United States, but there are altogether 7 countries to this agreement. So let's find out or name these 7 countries or entities. So in addition to Iran, on the opposite side was the United States, Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China, as well as the European Union. So Iran was negotiating with 7 entities to defend its rights. And Iran's position was and remains that it does not want a nuclear bomb. It does not, the nuclear bomb does not come into Iran's strategic calculations. They do not consider that to be necessary. Iran has developed its defensive capability sufficiently to be able to defend itself. And in order to convince the rest of the world, because it was subjected to really, really terrible sanctions, Iran said, okay, we are prepared to cap the enrichment of uranium at 3.5%. We wouldn't go beyond that. We are prepared to cap some of our nuclear facilities, and we are not going to introduce new equipment in order to purify this nuclear fissile material. In return for these Western countries, led by the US, that have imposed these sanctions, that these sanctions have to be removed. Now, Iran categorically stated that this deals only and only with the nuclear issue. And Iran is not prepared to discuss anything else with the United States or anybody else, particularly relating to its defense capabilities. I mean, no country in the world is going to accept any caps on its defense capabilities or trying to defend itself. Otherwise, it would be terribly vulnerable. And Iran has already, in the sense of sort of, you know, providing intrusive inspections into its nuclear facilities. No other country in the world has accepted those kinds of International Atomic Energy Agency inspections. And incidentally, inspectors from the International Atomic Energy Agency, when they have gone in there without any notice, they've gone wherever they want to go, particularly, I mean, for all the nuclear facilities, they are allowed to go. They can have snap inspections. They have installed cameras, etc. And that information of Iran's nuclear scientists, etc., has been provided to the US and to Israel. And that is what we witnessed on November the 27th of 2020, when one of Iran's leading nuclear scientists was assassinated in broad daylight in Tehran. And it is well known that Israel was responsible for it. And we also know that America, at the beginning of last year, which is January the 3rd, 2020, one of Iran's top generals, General Qasem Soleimani, was assassinated as he arrived in Baghdad. He was on a diplomatic mission. He had been invited by the Iraqi government with respect to carrying a very important message from the government of Iran regarding certain issues relating to the Middle East region. So we see that Iran has strictly adhered to its requirements or its obligations. But what do we see on the other hand? The United States, when Trump came in, he imposed, not only walked out of the treaty, but he imposed these raft of sanctions against the Islamic Republic, which have obviously caused a lot of damage to Iran and its economy and caused a lot of suffering to its people. And now the Americans are saying that they want to come into the treaty and they want Iran to do other things. Well, Iran's foreign minister had pointed out that if Iran wanted to negotiate these other things, it would have done so in 2017 when Trump became the president. Why would Iran subject itself to such punishing sanctions for 3 years and getting nothing in return? So Iran will simply not negotiate its defense capability with anybody. And if the Americans want to continue with the sanctions, which are totally illegal, and regrettably, even the European countries, Britain, France, and Germany, have refused to abide by the terms of that treaty. So Iran is saying, America, if you want to come into the pact again, well, what you have to do is to lift the sanctions. We don't want another country coming in and saying, now you have to, you know, limit your missile capability, or you have to change your policies, etc. That is not on the cards, and Iran will simply not accept it, no matter how much noise Biden makes or anybody else makes. And I'm afraid if these kinds of attitudes continue, then there is likely to be further instability in the region, because Iran will simply not negotiate its defense capabilities with any power, no matter what.
That's the voice of Zafar Benghash. And Zafar, we have about 5 minutes here. I want to make sure I ask you or point out that the Islamic Republic is scheduled for elections this spring or summer. Am I right?
That is correct. It's going to be in June. There are going to be presidential elections taking place. And of course, you know, there is a lot of speculation as to who might be in the running. I haven't been able to, you know, find any sort of, you know, specific information, although I've been trying to do so. But what I can say is that the current president, President Hassan Rouhani, cannot run again because according to Iran's constitution, the president can only run for 2 terms. So obviously he would not be one of the candidates. There will be obviously other candidates, but we still don't know exactly who is likely to come. But if I want to sort of, you know, look into my crystal ball, what I can say.
Raise that because as it's always funny when these elections happen, because always the United States says it's an authoritarian regime, it's a dictatorship, it's run by a group of imams or some. They always make all, but then they get very interested in who's going to be elected, and then they also meddle. It's almost the timing is quite remarkable. I would guess, I would like your opinion, but the U.S. can never keep its hands out of these elections, and they turn them often into a crisis.
Absolutely. Each time that there is an election in Iran, and obviously there are so many, you know, agencies in the United States, including even beyond the CIA, there are other agencies, for instance, you know, Foundation for Democracy and so on, and all of these people that basically funnel money into Iran to try to influence the election results, etc. But I'd have to say that the people of Iran have shown remarkable maturity, that they have been able to frustrate all of these attempts at subversion of their democratic rights, and they have come through each time choosing their own candidates and not submitting to the manipulation of the United States or other foreign powers. And, you know, apropos the elections, I think we need to look at, you know, what's been going on in Washington, D.C. I mean, you know, people have been pointing out that, you know, now there are, the U.S. has more troops in Washington, D.C. than it has in Afghanistan and Iraq put together. And we saw, you know, a couple of weeks ago what took place at Capitol Hill. And I'm really amazed at, you know
these officials. They're calling Washington, D.C. at the moment the Green Zone?
That's correct.
The Congress is in the Green Zone.
Yes, of course, and they have to have barricades all around. I mean, you know, this is, but one of the funny things is that, you know, when these kinds of things happen, the Americans always say that the establishment, well, this is not who we are, this is not, you know, this is un-American, etc. Well, I think they really need to read their own history. I mean, you know, in 1861, the Capitol building was actually taken over by insurrectionists who stopped the vote count by Congress. So I think, you know, Americans have a lot to learn from their own history. They ought to go back into their history rather than the myths that they have been fed all these years, that this is not who you are. I mean, that's exactly who you are. This is exactly what you have been doing. Somebody had quipped that since, because of this pandemic, there have been travel restrictions. So the Americans decided to have a coup in their own country instead of a country outside. So that's, I think,
that was a viral joke that's going around that because of COVID, they had to overthrow their own government.
That is correct, yes.
It's a pleasure talking to you, Zephyr Bengash, Crescent International. It's been very informative. We really have to keep our eye on the Yemen matter. We want to come back and talk to you again soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Phil. It's my great pleasure. Take care.